Okay.
Well, our next speaker is from Purdue University. The first one was a Christian university. Here we have a secular one, and William Oakes will be talking about, again, learning engineering science while serving the poor. He graduated from Purdue, and he is at Purdue, which is unusual for someone to graduate a university and then be faculty member there. He's associate faculty, associate professor at Purdue, and director of the ethics program. And we'll see from now the other side, the secular side, how a similar situation is handled.
So David started with his kind of story. I'll tell you a little bit about mine. Like David, I was a happy engineer out in industry. I was actually designing aircraft engines and did kind of like he did, is kind of ask God what I should do future, and was led to go teach. I didn't have my PhD at that point, so it meant me going back to school, which I shared is what got me to Purdue, because they said when you're picking your school in the state for your PhD, they will not hire you. And I don't know if you're, those of you, well, Indiana is where we live now. They grow corn and soy. That's about it. And I said I didn't want to spend the rest of my life in Indiana. I'll go to Purdue, and lo and behold, God had some other. I said that's one of the things God has, a sense of humor. We're still in Indiana. And a lot of it is actually the service learning work, which is what I wanted to talk today about. And to put the context, and anyone following David, Purdue is a state-funded institution. So we're under all kinds of restrictions of what we can do in the way of identifying ourselves as Christians and putting that into the classroom, or actually not. When I was offered the directorship of our program, I had worked as an associate director, and the previous director became dean of our school. So if anyone were to ask, do we have administrative support? Yes, we do. But she explained, she was told by our provost that I had to become less openly Christian if I was going to move over into the directorship, which there was a lot of praying that I did and sought counsel and said, okay, I could fit that. The thing that's fascinating to me is the service learning, and I'll go on and explain. It's really a biblical model, I think, for learning any subject. And here we're talking about engineering or science. The frustrating or scary thing for me is in the States, it's really being driven by the secular community. And it's not being attached. And one of the byproducts, I believe, is you've got values of caring for the poor and the underserved in our country that are not being attached to the church. And so when I grabbed colleagues like Walter and David, I shared that part of my heart is the church should have been out in front with a lot of these things. And this work has also brought up some really cool ways to interact with the students. So I'm going to go back and define. I want to talk about service learning, and it's got... It's actually a pedagogy, and some people defined it, where you're taking service to a community. Students are intentionally guided through some kind of activity to reflect on their involvement to gain further understanding of course content, which is important. So we're putting service in the classroom not as an extra thing, not as a thing that's going to threaten our accreditation or our credibility, but to improve learning. And while we're doing that, they can learn more about their discipline, their relationships, the social need, and enhance that sense of civic responsibility. I think from a Christian standpoint, it takes any discipline and connects it with any discipline of how you can connect service to the poor. And what we're seeing in the States is a lot of the young people are very interested in doing something that's going to make a difference. They don't associate mechanical engineering, electrical engineering. They're not associating study of physics or any of those things with any connection with helping the poor. And to give you an example, I had a young man that went to a missions conference, and God just really did a work on him. And that week, he came back fired up, ready to go in the mission field. He sought counsel back home, and they said, you should get a college degree just to set you up in your career. He came back from that experience, and he showed up in my office. He said, I need a different major. I said, and I had him in his first semester, and he said, I remember you identified yourself as a Christian, which is legal to do in our university. And I said, I need you to help me figure out. He's electrical engineering. We got talking, and he loved being an electrical engineer. He had an A average. He'd taken as a kid every electrical appliance at home apart, you know, and destroyed things. He should have been an electrical engineer. And I said, why do you want to change? He said, I can't figure out how that fit with the mission field. I need something that's going to be applicable. So then we got talking about communication technology, wireless communications. Do you think that would be valuable in the mission? Yeah. Who do you think does those? He goes, electrical engineer. Because a lot of our young people are trying to figure out God's wired them in a certain way. And they said, oh, I feel called to do this. And they're not trusting God to say, okay, you wired me this way. And I think we, as adult Christians, aren't doing our part to help them see some of those things. So this is part of my scheming. Now, the pedagogy of service learning, it's got this service part. That's the name. The service isn't supposed to be, okay, I'm going to do service work for a company. It's some underserved, something that wouldn't have been done otherwise. It's tied to academic learning, and this is one of the things that God's put me in a place to do is to travel around to other universities and colleges and talk to faculty. And this is a big thing when you're looking at service. There are people say, wow, I want to get my students doing service, and I'm going to get them out in the community. Well, if you're going to put it in a classroom, it's got to get tied back to the academic learning. The cool thing is there are all kinds of opportunities to do that. And where the students are graded on that. There's another principle in this, which again, as I got into this, it just killed me. I'm like, oh, yeah, I could find biblical references for that and that. The idea of we're not doing things for people, we're doing things with people. So when we go into these underserved communities to get the students to see what's the expertise and the value that they have, whether it's locally or overseas. The last thing is, and this is a cultural thing for me, because in the States, the service learning movement came up in the social sciences, the liberal arts areas, and they said, oh, our students reflect. I'm like, engineers don't reflect. That's why we went into that. What we do is we analyze everything to death, though. Drives my wife crazy. We do that. I said, what did you think? Well, this is, yes, dear, it was fine. But when we do something, when we design something, we go back and analyze it to make sure. Well, students are guided through reflection opportunities, and as we got into educational research, I learned the word metacognition. It's getting the students to think about their learning as a better learning process for two reasons. One, they don't get how the service is related to the academic content unless you intentionally guide them through. The second thing is there's times we put them out in underserved communities and believe that they learned things that we wanted. And often they had their stereotypes reinforced. And I've had that in my students. Just come away with some really awful things that they learned, but the reflection allowed us to catch those and help process some of those things. So that's the service learning. And to emphasize a point, I was actually at a national meeting. I'm sitting there, and you've got all these leaders of service learning, and I'm just, I want to stand up and shout at them. And lunch I shared with some colleagues, and they're like, yes, we wanted to say something. Because we get so wrapped up in the service, the impact that our students that get involved in this have, because they're impacting people's lives. The danger there is that we say, okay, we're going to focus on the service. Well, this is a question to say, well, how would we do that in a classroom? Somebody over here said we have a rigorous way we accredit. And there's a perception that when we do this work, somehow we're undermining the academic integrity, the rigor of what we're doing. And actually what we're trying to do is to enhance it and to balance the service and the learning. So, David, you know, we were talking, there are times with our courses in our programs that we say, you know, here's a really compelling project that doesn't fit for what our students are learning in that class, and we can't do that. And does that pain me? Yes. But in our community, I'm kind of like, David, we're turning people away. I said, we can't do everything. But in my classroom, we have to be teaching what we're supposed to be teaching, or I'm not fulfilling my obligation. And another thing that I believe, and I believe when we put this in the university, it needs to be in the curriculum. Because we send messages to the students. When we do this, it's totally outside the classroom. We're saying, well, it's not real what we're doing. It's an aside thing. And a message that I want our students to get is, this is what we do. This is who we are. And if you put this in terms of believers, to say, this is part of what I need to do professionally. I dragged my dad over here. I said, hey, you want to go to Scotland? And he graciously accepted coming over, but he came out of the medical field. The medical field, and one of the things he taught me is, when you're thinking of tithing, it's not just your money, it's your professional work. Well, when I started being an engineer, what I was taught, I'm like, it doesn't have any relevance to the poor. I'll just write a slightly bigger check. And we totally miss that. But I think there are messages that we send when we don't put this into the curriculum, that's not who we are. Now, at our university, our president, our university is something they call a land-grant school, where it's a state school supposed to be serving the state. So this is what we should be about. And I could go on. Some cool things on the learning. There are a number of people. The books I like is Where's the Learning and Service Learning. Kind of the scientists that have gone out and documented students who are engaged in service learning come out with a higher comprehension of the course materials. And from what I understand, not being a cognitive scientist, but your brain actually gets wired with more connections to that subject matter that you're trying to teach, and they're able to recall it more effectively. And there's some others, too. I want to give you some examples of what we're doing. Our EPICS program, the E actually stands for engineering. It's a multidisciplinary program. If any of you are here when we get through the projects and say, or in the questions and want an example of a project in a different discipline, I'd be happy to do that. We break our universe up into four areas: the environment, working with people with disabilities, education and outreach, and human services. The education and outreach projects, very often what we're doing is we're looking at affordable designs. We'll partner with schools or organizations trying to do education things and design, put things in the classroom that those schools wouldn't normally be able to afford. I know this is on a later slide. I should say our EPICS program, these are all going to be local projects. Part of what we do are locally based projects within driving distance of the campus. Human services, a lot of information technology opportunities. The agencies that work with the poor can't afford technical staff. Is there opportunities for us? Habitat for Humanity, we've gotten involved not only locally, but we've also gotten involved with the multi-university projects for Habitat International around some energy analysis, alternative energy. This is an interesting thing. Our school we worked up with out at San Jose, California, was doing some solar energy work around trailer parks. A lot of the alternative energy work are for homes that, yeah, if you could afford to pay the bills anyway, you could do this, but there's very little going on what this looks like in poor areas. And they're looking at models where they could take some of these poor neighborhoods and turn them into power generation and actually put power back to the grid and be an income source. Very cool things around assistive technology. This is another one in the States where if your insurance can pay for things, you can get some really great things, but there are other examples where you can't. Or these are actually some high school students that invented a device that would replace students or children being given medicine that, for this case, it was children who were drooling. Some of the mild cerebral palsy and some of the others, they drill in middle school, they'd get teased, but otherwise they could get mainstream. Well, what the doctors would do is you give them a drug for something else that has a byproduct of dry mouth, and it helps that. And they're actually got a little feedback system designed there. In New Zealand, We did a lot of work with our agriculture and our science folks looking at water quality around farms. We used one of the Purdue farms as a demonstration. The program we worked with in New Zealand was looking at some recycling, both on glass and some biodiesel for conversion of cooking oil. Our EPICS program, these are actually classes. So this is a series of classes our students take as a substitute for other classes that might be required within their department. So we've gone around, and all but one of our engineering departments will take our EPICS classes for a department class, at least one. They're long-term partnerships. Like David, what we found going in for a semester or even a year is not what the communities need. They're looking for long-term partnerships. Our program's been going on for 12 years. The two organizations that still needed us that we started with, we're still partnering with. We have 30 partnerships. 30 different partnerships that are still going on this fall. We allow students all the way from the first year. We have 100 first-year students. Their first semester are going to be here, all the way through their graduating year, their fourth year. And we're pretty much split evenly. We're going to have about 400 students this fall semester. One of the things we do is we put them on large teams. The teams, each team is partnered with a different community organization. They have multiple projects going on. And again, when David talked about the turnover, we got the same thing, that our students are continuing to go out. We had 30 different disciplines this last year participate. A couple things on local partnership. And you know, when we talk about the need, I'm not saying that there aren't global needs, but when I look at some of the service funding, some of the reasons that we do local partnerships, one, it's affordable and scalable. If we want to say, hey, could we do this for everybody? Yes, yeah, so I was down in Trinidad and Tobago, and they said, could we do this for everybody? I was like, yeah, when? But economically, that you can do that. Pedagogically, it gives the student somebody to interact with on a regular basis, and that's what we're looking for. It also opens your eyes. This is, my mother is a social worker, and she talked about a phenomenon in our church groups, the mission trip phenomenon, that, okay, I'm going to get all excited for 1 week, I'm going to go off and serve them, I'm going to come back, and whew, I'm glad there aren't needy people like that around me. And from a Christian witness standpoint, a lot of those people, when you look at the people we're around, we can have a profound impact with them. And I also believe if you get students from a learning standpoint and affordable, I believe that you can move from local and say, okay, let's look at these needs. You can identify them locally, easier to that. Some of the reasons that service learning has been, David asked the question, so, okay, I understand from a Christian standpoint, how do you do this in a secular school? An issue that we're dealing with in the States is there are fewer students wanting to go into the engineering and the sciences, and they're all still pretty much white male. And what we're finding with this kind of work is we're increasing diversity. We're not all, and this interests me, but it's also the kinds of students who want to go in. I'd love to have the kinds of students going into our field that are interested in applications from the core. That when we talk about these big companies exploiting folks, and I say, you know, I'm educating their future managers. I'd love to have them to say, okay, maybe we shouldn't be putting a plant there. And we really think that service learning has the potential to change. Some other reasons, there's a lot of discussion on what characteristics the engineers of the future are going to need. We align beautifully with that in our National Academy. Accreditation, when you ask that, we're actually an advantage to that. We've flown through, we're going to fly through, not going to, we're getting accredited again this year, but our last accreditation, they love what we're doing, and also a curricular efficiency. A lot of our colleagues are saying, how do you teach all these new things? Corporate partnerships, we're able to bring money. When I talk about some of these extra things they're trying to cram in, entrepreneurship is one of these things. They're saying, wow, it'd be great to teach that. Well, this is a really cool way to teach it, because our students go out and they identify solutions to compelling needs. compelling needs of people. And then you say, are there other people who could benefit? And then it's a really cool discussion. Should we give this away? Would you need a company? And sometimes, like that swallow monitoring device, the high school kids, they said you needed a company to make it affordable. And you can actually get to those. And I think that these are kind of the kinds of conversations when kids who are interested in entrepreneurship are around biblical values. I put a few things in the back. Our university has been gracious. I actually have staff to help us work with other universities, and there are a couple of flyers. This is just a flyer about information on the program. I think they're on the floor now back there. We also hold an annual conference where we bring folks to. I expect some of the people who are here into that. And we started getting into high school. And we had our first group of high school teachers. Now, again, I can't go add some of the things around the Christian principles for those. But I'm really excited because I think that it allows us opportunity to get them to think about our kind of discipline and attract students who the research is showing are leaving us, leaving our field, because they want to do some of these kinds of things.
Well, thank you very much. We have time for questions.
Yes, ma'am.
For those of you who aren't necessarily maybe the some of you who are, you started off saying, I can't say too much about how I am for you. Well, I'm a K-State, Kansas State, I can't.
Cool.
Nobody says anything. If I were possible, I'd have been rather not to. But there's nothing wrong with standing up and saying, I'm a Christian, I just want to let you do it every year.
Yes. And
I think we shouldn't, it's not illegal, and we shouldn't let it go pressure.
No, I agree. Well, and it's not. And it was one of the things, actually, Walter and some of his colleagues were real good on how you do that. So every class I have, every student knows I'm a Christian. And there's some other things. But it is, and it really varies around the country by school.
Yeah, it could be different by individual school, but
At my institution, I actually got talked to about not being part of the Christian faculty group and identifying myself as that, as an untenured professor, in the context that may not be good for promotion.
Mm-hmm. But I have not seen that at all.
That's so illegal. But
it's interesting.
Yeah. Well, I didn't listen, but.
our winter conference, ASA conference at Colorado University, our lead speaker was Bernard Amadei, the one who started the engineering lab for about 20 years. And it was in the class that we had. And he got up and he made a very interesting remark. He said, I have been here for 16 years as a full professor, and it's the first time I can mention Jesus in the classroom. Mm.
That's the time he felt he could. I don't think that we should.
Well, it's interesting. You may. That's right. Yeah. Good point. Other questions? There are material for both speakers. I have left materials in the back so you can pick up. Any questions, comments? Okay, our last speaker, and he graciously has become the last because he organized all these sessions.
Somebody had to go.
Walter Bradley.
Shut the door over.